As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Soccer Show and our weekend review. We're looking back on a weekend where the Premier League carried on without missing a beat, even though Gary Lineker ended soccer with a controversial tweet, where Bournemouth bid to stay up took a huge stride thanks to a Mo Salah penalty that went about 5 feet wide, where Graham Potter picked up some more Chelsea clout and Casemiro earned himself 4 games out. Elsewhere, Bayern stayed top by hitting 5, Barcelona continued to thrive, Inter Milan lost a little bit of honour, and Napoli are still rocking thanks to Cavaradonna. And in MLS, Minnesota played in the snow. New England were dealt a Californian blow. St. Louis are proving to be a massive hit. And Charlotte FC looked short of ideas. My name's Ryan Bailey. Joining me today, a man whose life is finer because apparently he spent the weekend in North Carolina. Taylor Rockwell, hello.
Yes, it's fine because I'm back in Virginia. Thankfully, I no longer have to be North Carolina. Face, Ryan Bailey.
Why did you have to go there straight off the bat? I was trying to be nice about North Carolina for a second.
So much Tar Heels gear. So much Tar Heels gear all over the place. And for a person who, about this time of year, gets interested in college basketball, I guess that's good. I guess that was a good reminder that college basketball exists.
So not that North Carolina will be in March Madness, just to be clear. Not like the University of Arizona, baby. 2-seed in the South. Let's go.
I don't know what's happening anymore. I'm already lost.
It's okay. Don't worry about it, Ryan. It's fine.
Taylor, were you in North Carolina because you happened to be coaching Charlotte FC and you decided to move all the players around into different positions and tell them not to defend? Is that what you were there for this weekend?
No, I am not their new coach or their former coach. But it was fun to see Charlotte also be bad this weekend, since Manchester United, as you mentioned, had a rough weekend, Ryan. It was nice to know that we could commiserate in the beginning of this show. I don't know who our two hosts are what they're feeling about their respective teams. But a rough weekend overall for people on this show so far.
Well, Taylor, let's dig in a little more into that. Joining us, a man who handles his analysis like Gavi dives headfirst into headed tackles. Joe Lowry, I don't know if you saw the Barcelona game, but Gavi twice did like the John Terry, Phil Jones header 1 inch off the floor thing. It was a work of art, Joe. Did you see it?
Gavi doesn't understand that he's like 5 feet, 110. Like he doesn't know it. I don't think he's ever actually like looked in a full body mirror to see how small he is as a person to go into these challenges so recklessly. Or maybe it's his lack of size that allows him to go full on like torpedo right straight into somebody. I don't know what it is, but this kid is pure chaos. He is Barcelona. He is kind of exactly what Xavi wants from a central midfielder, from a half space guy, wherever he's going to be playing on any given weekend. But he is also just pure energy and fight, and it is so good.
It's great. So little regard for his own personal safety. No, I'm a big fan of the style. Graham Ruthven is out on vacay this week, so joining us, we have a man who isn't going to make us talk about pies for a few minutes. David Garst, hello. How are you? How did your teams perform this weekend?
Well, I'm neutral across the board. That's how I always am winning. But I've been eating a lot of Colombian meat pastries this weekend. They're basically like pies. So if you need me to fill that role, I'm capable of doing it.
Colombian meat pastries was my favorite band from 2002. That's really cool. Very nice.
Why have you been eating a lot of them lately?
I'm visiting a town out on Long Island, and someone told me that this bakery was good, and I went in the first day and was like, this is the best thing I've ever eaten. And so to get creative, I've just re-eaten the same thing over and over again.
Very nice. Gus, where are you from originally?
Long Island.
That's what I thought. So, how am I supposed to say it if you're from there? Like, what is
Long Island?
Is it Long Island? Is that how you do it?
Yeah, you just combine the two. You could call it Strong Island if you really wanted to. But then you'd have to wear a velour jumpsuit and stuff like that.
I'm back in. Once the velour jumpsuit became an option, I'm back in.
David, while we're talking about pronunciation, I have to ask you, is it acceptable for someone with my accent to say David Gass? I ask this because my daughter, who grew up in the US but has British parents, we were in the car not so long ago, and she said, Daddy, can we stop in the gas station? I was like, what? The gas station. I want to go to the gas station. I was like, have I done this? Have I polluted her pronunciation? That's a long way of saying, do people pronounce your name wrong quite a lot?
Yes, they do. It's German, though, so it's weird that the English... I didn't know the English part was an issue. Normally, the issue is if it's an A or an O, and that's a German thing, and I'm not German, so I don't really care. So feel free to call me whatever you want.
Well, that's interesting. You've gone with the correct European pronunciation of your name as Gus, because Americans... Don't take this badly, everybody, on this call. Americans tend to pronounce their own names incorrectly quite a lot. I've got a friend whose surname is Doherty, who says Doherty. I know someone who's called Gerda, who says Geddy. So congratulations, David, for actually pronouncing your own name correctly.
Apparently it's because my uncle was tired of getting made fun of as a kid at school when he was like 8. And my grandparents didn't care because it's a fake name. That's probably why Americans don't pronounce their names right. Because they got to Ellis Island and they told them, no, your name's this now, and no one ever cared.
Yeah, that's your introduction to this country. Your name is this now. Deal with it. Ryan, if ever there were a great introduction as to why the whole world loves the English, it's them showing up in that country and then saying, you're saying your name incorrectly, just so you know. And as a person who, as I've said before, was frequently told, why do you have a surname for a first name by people who almost universally had English accents? I just want to say, from the bottom of my heart, be quiet, Ryan.
I'm saying you're pronouncing your names wrong, and we will revoke your independence at any given moment should you continue to do so. Shall we continue with the podcast? Patreon.com/Total Soccer Show, by the way, if you want more of this hilarious surname pronunciation.
I mean, you all are doing a great job of revoking your own independence already, so that's working out well for England.
Oh, boy. Oh, that leads us to our opening topic, Tay-Tay. That leads
How
us
perfect.
Listener, we are an American soccer show, of course, but you may have noticed on the socials and elsewhere a big story happening in England and Britain, I should say, over the weekend. Gary Lineker, who the legendary striker of Tottenham and Barcelona fame, who is the preeminent BBC talent for presenting Match of the Day, sort of the cultural behemoth that is Match of the Day, the Saturday night highlight show of Premier League that happens every week. Or it nearly happened this past weekend. Basically, Gary Lineker was told to step back from hosting over a row the BBC had over impartiality. So he tweeted last week about UK migration policy that's being condemned by the United Nations. By the way, he likened it to 1930s Germany. He was suspended for being political and was told he would have to agree to follow social guidelines to be allowed back on. So the issue there being that dozens of other presenters on the same network, the BBC, are political in their social presence. The issue also being that the BBC has many of its upper echelons, its director general, for example, are donors of the Conservative Party in the UK. So there's some issues over impartiality and some ironies over him being taken off the air over impartiality. But we had this incredible series of events on Friday where his co-analyst Alan Shearer said, well, I'm not doing the show either. Ian Wright said the same thing. Then all of the commentators who were commentating on the highlights said, we're not doing it either. Then BBC Radio stepped down. So basically you had this situation where Match of the Day, which Tay likes to completely legally watch every week as a matter of course, ended up being 20 minutes long. It can be an hour and a half sometimes. Definitely usually over an hour. They had no world feed rights to BBC, so it had no commentary at all. It was basically, Taylor, like watching a bad poorly produced YouTube clip, and one after the other, with even the graphics in between them looked like it was the intern that made them. It was incredible.
And it may well have been. Then I saw the tweet that the viewership was up, and I couldn't tell if that was sort of spin that they were trying to say, like, actually, people love this, or if that was data from before these events had occurred, or if that was basically people tuning in to see how big of a train wreck it was going to be because you had no one hosting it and doing the job that those gentlemen usually do, which is to say explaining the games, providing great analysis, providing good tactical insight, and having a bit of banter at the same time.
Indeed. I think the Taylor, it tended to be, if you have like a Union Jack in your Twitter handle, you tend to like the new format that we saw last weekend. For some reason, I can't figure out why. I don't know why. But anyway, the update from today, this Monday as we speak, is that Gary Lineker will be back presenting Match of the Day this coming weekend. He will, we understand, be able to tweet without restrictions. So, Taylor, this is what we call a giant own goal, I believe, from the British Broadcasting Corporation.
Yes, especially when there are things like when, Ryan, you first, I think you were messaging the group about like who's going to, like jokingly, who is going to take over Match of the Day hosting duties, and I speculated it would be Piers Morgan, and then to see Piers Morgan come out and basically defend Gary Lineker and say it's interesting that you all wanted him to be political during the Qatar World Cup, but now you don't want that to be the case, and it does seem like there was a bit of selective memory with this one and selective approach when it comes to how the BBC tried to handle Gary Lineker, and maybe a little bit of, like, don't you know who we are? You'll do what we say, and that did not go well, and it has not gone well, and I think it's a good reminder that like pundits can take a stand and say what they want. And at the same time, I mean, it does go both ways and it can be a little bit tricky. But I think I'm very happy that Gary Lineker is back doing his job because I think he's excellent at what he does. And I think he provides like just genuinely like a wonderful atmosphere for that show. And for people who haven't seen it before, for Americans who haven't seen it before, it is an amazing program. Like it's friends. It's clearly friends who are like professionals at the same time with a long history of playing. So they bring that level of expertise. They bring that level of insight into what must be happening, why it must be happening. But it's way less reactionary in my mind, at least. It's way less inflammatory and screaming their takes and much more. Here is what went right. Here's what went wrong. Isn't this great? Wasn't this curious? And I think always with a little bit of like a tongue in cheek vibe. And I think to have that energy when it comes to talking about sports week in, week out is difficult. It's challenging. And so I'm really happy that Gary Lineker is back. I think he provides a wonderful service, and I think he's a good follow on Twitter as well.
And the most interesting part to me was he's not an employee of BBC, Gary Lineker. He's freelance hired to do this. So they didn't actually have a policy in place to control what he was tweeting, hence the chaos that I think ensued over the course of the week, which is, you know, for an organization like that, you'd probably want to look at your own guidelines before you do something like suspending the biggest face. But you mentioned the relationship they have. I think it was pretty clear over the course of the weekend, right, to stand in solidarity quickly. Ian Wright announced he was not going to do the show before he even told the BBC on his own platforms. So, like, you saw the relationship they all have, which I agree with you makes the program entertaining.
Yeah, excellent show of solidarity we saw there. But business as usual, and the BBC still may or may not be influenced by political institutions hereafter. Fun and games. Sport and politics, ladies and gents.
This is where, Ryan, this is where it becomes awkward because I have to announce actually Graham isn't on vacation. We just have an unofficial policy of not talking about pies more than once a month. And Graham has been sort of in violation of that. He won't stop tweeting about pies. So he's taking a mandatory break to think about his pie tweeting and his pie activity. And then we'll see what happens.
See, if I was still allowed to constantly talk about pies, then this would be a comparable situation, Taylor. There we are. All right.
Exactly.
Let's move on and talk about the Sockers, shall we? Starting in the Premier League, Bournemouth 1, Liverpool 0. Philip Billing with the goal there to help Bournemouth out of the relegation zone for a few hours at least. And as I mentioned, David, in the intro, Mo Salah with the opportunity to get a goal for Liverpool, but put it quite wide into the stands.
This is a team for Liverpool where you have, obviously last week, or was it 2 weeks ago at this point, where you're like, yep, this team's back, this is who they are. And then the same play, it's not like, oh, injuries and other pieces come in. The same exact players then show up the next game and look like that Space Jam scene where they've lost all their powers and they're like tripping over themselves. The defending on the goal conceded from Virgil van Dijk, who was the best defender on the planet not that long ago, and then every other teammate with him, I think is even more telling than the Mo Salah miss.
It was indeed. Joe, what did you make of this one? Liverpool, are they back? They're going to be back next week. They're doing like that Borussia Dortmund roller coaster thing. You know how Dortmund used to be terrible and great week on, week off?
Used to be.
Yeah, I was going to say, definitely aren't that way anymore okay. after the up and down last couple weeks we've seen from them. I mean, this is kind of who Liverpool are this season. I'm of the belief that their talent is good enough at least to get them into fifth, and that maybe they're going to sneak into the Champions League next year if an English team wins it. They could climb up to fourth. They've got a game in hand on Tottenham, but they're 6 points there. As far as a gap goes, this was a really, really bad loss for Liverpool, not just because they didn't play especially well, not just because they left at least something on the table courtesy of that Mo Salah penalty miss, but because of the gap then that's there between them and Tottenham in the table. So issues there. Yeah, I'm completely stuck on this goal as well, guys. I genuinely don't understand what Virgil van Dijk is doing on this play, to the point where it made me wonder if he was injured or if there was something else happening here. So to run folks through it, it's a long ball over the top from Bournemouth. It's a really nice ball into space. And
Konate keeps the man on.
Yeah, right. So there's the first error there from Liverpool is that the offside line is not good. It's not a line. It's more of like it's not a straight line. Let's put it that way. It's a series of lines. And so Bournemouth get the ball in behind the back line, and it's Virgil van Dijk 1v1 defending, which is exactly what you want if you're Liverpool. This is what you paid for. This is what you pay him for. And he gets dusted. And then worse than that, it's okay if you lose that 1v1 battle. It's less okay if you're Virgil van Dijk, but he just gives up. Like, he just stops. And that, if I'm Jurgen Klopp, I am completely livid at that point. So then Bournemouth cut the ball back into the box, and Trent Alexander-Arnold and Konate both, I mean, they're in a tough spot, right? Because they're not really in position. They're dealing with a little bit of an overload or at least a positional disadvantage there. But they both can't figure out how to mark Billing, and he scores a nice goal in the 28th minute. It's a brutal sequence from Liverpool, and I can't help but think that when they're at their heyday under Jurgen Klopp a couple of years ago, like, this is the kind of goal that doesn't happen. Also, I know we've mentioned Graham a lot. Graham, we miss you. Hope you're having a good either vacation or pie-enforced detention. But, like, this is the kind of stuff. You know, we talk about CCV being the world's best defender now. It's clear that Virgil van Dijk heard that, and his confidence is shattered. I'm just going to put it that way.
Oh, boy. Taylor, I mean, for Bournemouth, this is a massive result for them. They had that 2-0 lead at Arsenal, of course, which they didn't manage to hold on to last weekend. Liverpool's next three games, by the way, Taylor. Have you looked up who they're against? Because
no.
It's Man City, Chelsea, and Arsenal. Here, boy.
I mean, but as Goss alluded to, we don't know if it's going to be a 7-0 against Chelsea with them winning and looking dominant, or if it's going to be them kind of taking their foot off the gas and coasting to seventh place, whatever it may be this season. It does feel like that Man United game, they were up for it. They were up for the rivalry, up for the derby. I guess it's not a derby, but up for the rivalry, and were able to perform. Whereas with Bournemouth, it feels like they just didn't have that same level of intensity, and it does seem like a team right now that doesn't have that consistency, that unified approach that we've seen from Liverpool in the past, that they're going to do the same thing against every opponent. They're going to have maybe a few variations, a few permutations, but ultimately they're going to go at that team, be dominant, make something happen. Here this season, I think with a lot of it due to injuries, which we can certainly talk about, I think they've had the most games missed of any team in the Premier League, 162 games in total for their squad. I was reminded when I looked at that graphic that Arthur still plays for them. I think maybe has played one game in the entire season, so he's been out. They've had plenty of injuries, and I think that does sort of compound the issues there. But with all that said, I won't be surprised if they win all three of those upcoming games, because it's Liverpool, and why not?
You say they've missed 162 games. That's combined, I'm assuming, Taylor, because they haven't played that many.
No, they missed the last eight seasons. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they missed the last eight seasons of competitive fixtures.
Yeah. And they wanted to pad that stat because Arthur's been out for like 6 years for three different clubs. And they acquired him so that they could be like, look, we have so many players out. That's why we're not performing well.
I did see that. It was like when you have Oxlade-Chamberlain and Arthur, and I think there's one more in there that automatically means you're missing 100 games in total with those three players.
Oh, dear. Okay, why don't we take a quick move over to Old Trafford. Manchester United 0, Southampton 0. Casemiro with a red card in this one, Tay-Tay. Never had one at Real Madrid, everyone keeps telling us. It's his second of this season. He gets a four-game ban for that. Erik ten Hag not super happy with the situation. Marcus Rashford had a penalty shout. Maybe he wasn't happy about that as well. But a better game, Taylor, than the scoreline suggests, I would add, even if...
Was it? I think for neutrals, certainly, it probably was. I wasn't so in love with this game. I initially was not in love with the decision to give Casemiro the red because he's given the yellow. It goes to VAR, overturned, and given a straight red, his second of the season, as Ryan mentioned there. But I think it is the right decision in retrospect. And yes, some of that is that we get the VAR slowdown that will make a gentle breeze look like a homicidal maniac if you play it over and over again from just the right angle. But in this case, I think the criteria are all there because he's going in basically out of control because he's trying to make a desperation tackle, Casemiro, and therefore isn't in full control of his body. I think it's why he has to sort of engage the ball high up because he's trying to make that play. He's trying to reach. And because it's high up on the ball, it slips off. It connects with Carlos Alcaraz. And from there, it's basically studs up into the shin or into the shin bone. And so it's out of control. It's reckless. It potentially causes bodily harm, which makes it dangerous. I think that's the criteria for a red card. I understand why he would feel chagrined by that. And to see him crying and hugging Alcaraz afterwards and then slowly trudging off to get picked up by Anthony, it was an emotional moment for, I think, Manchester United fans, but also a frustrating one for feelings that there's been some inconsistency once again in the way VAR is applied, coupled with some of the decisions, as you mentioned there, Ryan, the handball. But I think some of that is probably like fandom sour grapes, and so I don't want to go too hard into that one. But this was a decision that I initially was not pleased about and have slowly come to accept that maybe it was probably right that you shouldn't go shins into someone's leg or studs into someone's shin.
What do you make of the Ten Hag quote after the game? Now, I will be honest, I have not gone into the match report on all 500 matches that Casemiro has played, but the quote was, Casemiro across European leagues in over 500 games never got a straight red card. Now he has two in like a month and a half.
Two in three Premier League games, I believe, is his number, like in terms of the numbers of games that he's been in. I mean, I think there is probably some aspect of Real Madrid controlling games the way they do means that he doesn't have to make those plays and doesn't have to engage in that way. Manchester United a bit more open this season, a bit more all over the place. And I think he is sort of the fiery leader of that team. And if you're going to lead by example, you're going to put yourself in those positions. It does, I think Ten Hag also talking about the handball decision, the lack of even a card on João Félix the day before in the Leicester game where he gets a pretty high up tackle and that one's not punished at all. Christian Eriksen is basically out for the rest of the season because he gets a pretty aggressive tackle. Garnacho in this game finishes like walking in a boot with crutches. That one's not so vicious overall, I would say. But I think there is, like, I think for Ten Hag, there is probably a lot of smoke there, and so he has to kind of bring it up. I think also he has to distract from the result, which wasn't ideal for Manchester United. But in the end, I think there's probably a little bit of feeling aggrieved by the way some of those decisions have gone. And I think ultimately it's Erik ten Hag being a smart manager and deflecting it onto the officials and the media against us versus, we're just not good every now and then, and we got to find a way to be more consistent.
Is there an element, Taylor, where Casemiro has been asked to do different things than he was at Real Madrid?
Yeah,
maybe 100%. You know, Kroos and Modric were doing things that now he has the mantle to do.
Yeah, in fact, like when he was first sort of breaking through at Real Madrid, or that first season when he did, a thing we talked about then was how a shortcoming in his game was closing gaps. That he was really good about sort of holding the line, directing traffic, being a playmaker, a deep lying playmaker, but also being a good actual defensive midfielder. But when you needed him to sort of spin off of one man and get to somebody else really quickly, that was where he became reckless. And he didn't pick up reds, but he would pick up yellow cards. And it was a thing that teams, I think, sort of capitalized upon and tried to get him in overloads centrally. And so that was a thing that I think Madrid coaches from there tried to sort of make sure that didn't happen and set up in a way that didn't make him have to make those types of plays. And I think as a result, we haven't seen him get into these situations. But with Manchester United, just a different story.
A different story indeed. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, a bit more Premier League. We're going to go around the continent. We're going to talk MLS and much, 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 much more. Do stick with us. Back shortly.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small town Welsh Football Club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League One? FX is welcome to Wrexham. Catch all new episodes Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back. Let's go to Craven Cottage. Fulham 0, Arsenal 3. Arsenal maintaining a 5-point advantage in the Premier League title race. This, Joe, is what we call a ruthless performance from champions elect. Or that's what I just said anyway.
Sounds about right to me. I mean, this was a borderline dominant Arsenal performance. They have a goal early on in this match that's called offsides. That one's brought back and they still managed to score 3 in this particular game. They were really good. This, to me, is a game that you look back and say, yeah, this is one that a title winner should be going out there and dominating, should be going out there and performing against a team in Fulham who has not been bad this year. Like they've been a very good team. They're currently 8th in the Premier League after the weekend. One thing that really stood out to me in this match, besides Jedi Robinson kind of getting dunked on multiple times, but we don't have to talk about that. One thing that stood out to me from this game was how sharp some of the tactical adjustments were from Mikel Arteta. We've talked about how disciplined and smart and really tactical this team is, oftentimes moving from kind of their 4-3-3 shape into more of a back three with a double pivot with Zinchenko moving into midfield. It's a lot of Man City stuff. You know, we've talked about that. We've also talked about how teams have plenty of film on Arsenal at this point in the year, right? They understand what the primary rotations are. They understand what the kill patterns in the final third are supposed to be. So, you know, at a certain point, you have to evolve a little bit. You have to adjust while still keeping your principles the same. And in this game, I thought Mikel Arteta did adjust. So Fulham defending in a 4-4-2, you think about that back three and midfield two that I just talked about for Arsenal, you know, you can sort of mark those two deeper central midfielders out of the game, or at least cut off access into them. And I thought Fulham did a pretty good job of that with their front two and then having two more central midfielders behind them to deal with Xhaka and Odegaard. So I thought Arteta reacted to that well by dropping Xhaka a little bit deeper, a little bit wider. That then cleared space for Trossard to drop in and also gave Xhaka more chances to be on the ball, to dictate play from a little bit of deeper areas. And just in general, I thought it was a sharp and timely adjustment from Arteta. I don't think it's the only thing that defined this game. Arsenal had the talent advantage. They were the better team in other facets as well. But just another sign of Arsenal being a really, really good team that is worthy of winning this title if they can hang on.
That's a big if, I suppose. David, they will be helped in that quest by the return of Gabriel Jesus, will they not?
Yeah, it was one of those days, as Joe said, like you look back on it. They probably needed an easier win, one where you don't have to give a full 97 minutes to get your goals and get back in it if you're going to be able to maintain what you need to energy-wise over the course of a title run. And then the emotional boost at the end of Gabriel Jesus coming on and the way the fans reacted even in an away game. Like it was, that may have been the loudest moment of the game. And that's for a guy coming on the field in the return. And then you add in, now you can sort of look back at it and say, you made it. Like when he got injured, the question was, can you bridge till he returns in this team that was built so heavily around him? And he was your one goal scorer at that moment when he left. And now you look at a team where there's a ton of confidence, I think, across the front 5 or 6 attacking players, and you got through that spell. And so now you can manage him back the way you want to. And I think you could feel all of that coming out of this game for Arsenal. And then you add in starting with a set piece goal, which is something where they're going to start scoring a couple more set piece goals. It's only going to get easier and easier for them.
Indeed. Man City keeping the pressure on with a 1-0 win at Crystal Palace. Erling Haaland with a penalty that settled that one. They're bogey team, I think, Crystal Palace. They've had given us some trouble over the years. Leicester 1-3. A third victory in a row for Chelsea. Sound the Potter alarm. Yay.
Is that actually how... That does feel like how it would be said by Graham Potter at this point in the season. Like,
yep. Sound my alarm, I guess. Are we winning? Are we okay? Can I still have a job, please?
Well,
200 million more?
Probably fairly drunk because apparently he gets a beer in the locker room every time they
win.
So.
That's right, baby.
3 in a row.
Well, is that the thing where the beer is delivered by Todd Bowley?
Yeah.
That's what Graham said. Yeah.
I think it only happened once, but I'm just going to assume a good luck charm, which means beers are being had.
If we're assuming things, what do we assume the beer is? Because it is always strange when you have those like contractual obligations. When you see the U.S. women's national team celebrating the She Believes win with cans of Bud Light that I can't believe they're drinking anywhere else but in those celebrations, do we think Todd Boehly brings a can of Bud Light to Graham Potter? Is he getting something slightly more reputable or maybe something slightly more sponsor appropriate for Chelsea?
I'm just going to throw this one out there. I think if you're that rich, you don't really care what the sponsors are and you'll pay the fine. And so you do whatever you want.
I also think that until you're in the European places, you don't get anything other than Bud Light. Like, if you're sitting in 10th.
That's the punishment.
Like, you get a Bud Light. Like, that's just where you're at right now. You don't deserve something better. You're in 10th place in the Premier League.
Whoa.
I don't know. Just
why
my
are we
two
hating
cents.
On Bud Light right now?
Oh, I'm just saying, it seems to me that
like
if we're
Heineken
talking about lower quality alcoholic beverages, you could do better than Bud Light. We'll just put it that way.
I would be very impressed if it was Bud Light, because that would mean Todd Boehly has had it flown in, because there is no chance they sell it in the United Kingdom.
Would you be surprised if Todd Boehly flew in Bud Light? Like, at this
not
point, I don't know what Todd...
Bit.
Yeah, right? Exactly. I don't know what that man is capable of, but he will spend some money to sign players. Why not spend some money to airlift in Bud Light? Yeah. In the relegation places, though, are they getting... is that like Beast Light? Like, what's the kind of lower tier one for if you're in the relegation zone? What do you get?
Dirty,
at full
it's just
time?
Dirty water. It's just dirty water.
What's lower than Bud Light? Bud Light with lime? Maybe I don't know. Let's hope that Bud don't sponsor our show anytime soon. And we
not
put a bow on
an
issue.
They won't. they're not going to at this point. That's done.
Indeed.
Wait, Taylor, did you know that Todd Boehly is from Maryland and went to Landon School in Bethesda?
That explains some things.
Are you so angry right now? Are we triggering you?
If anything, I'm just happy that like I could sense that there was something about him that I was like, I don't know what it is. I don't trust it. I'm not sure what to make of this, and to know that he's from Maryland does sort of tick a few more boxes for me. Thank you, David.
Wonderful stuff. Putting the train back on the tracks, we go to the Bundesliga now. Schalke 2,
we'll see
about Borussia
that.
Dortmund 2. Schalke coming back twice in this one. Dortmund dropping 2 points in the title race. Taylor, end of a fairly bad week for Dortmund with losing to the aforementioned beer dispensing Chelsea. And, a must-win game here, and they didn't.
I think there's a chance that I, at the very least, am overreacting to this, because I, like, with that in mind, thought, like, oh, here it is. Like, I was about to message Manuel, our German football expert, who we have on occasionally, to ask him, is this it? Is this the title race over? And then I realized this is one loss for Dortmund in the league. They're, what, like, 2 points behind Bayern? Something like that? 3 points?
They also didn't lose. They drew. It felt like a loss.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think fair. But I think it, for me in the moment, felt like, oh, this is it. They're slipping away. And then to realize, like, no, it's just two results. We'll see what happens. I think there is a little bit of letting past be precedent for Dortmund for me. And in looking at this game again, I think there are signs that it's still a very strong team who are motivated and capable of big things. At the same time, both of the Schalke goals come from Dortmund giving the ball away. The first one especially in a very needless position and then not doing a good job of covering up those issues. And the second goal, it's further up the pitch. It's Alaire turning the ball over. But then it's just a series of mistakes and a lack of sort of tight marking, a lack of professional fouling even. And I think that ruthlessness is the thing that we've always kind of worried about Dortmund not having as the season ticks on. And so I don't want to say, there we go, this is it. It's rearing its ugly head. It may have just been another derby. It's the Revere Derby. I can never say that word properly. I am not.
It's pronounced David Goss.
Derek Ray.
I was about to say,
thank you. Thank
I
you.
Really hope this doesn't end up being me as the German guy, because I am not the German guy on any level.
Noted German guy David Goss, what did you make of this game?
Oh my God. So I do think you're being a bit overreactive.
In German, please. In German.
Yeah. Obviously. I was even going to make a joke, and then I was like, I don't even have a schnitzel. That's the most I've got for you on this
schnitzel.
One. I do think you're being overreactive and not I understand the trepidation with this team. I do think this is different than Dortmund, which is normally the trend for them is earlier in the year, and it tails off over the second half. This is a mid to late season run that they've been on where they've been really good. But they are dealing with injuries, and that's Dortmund's story, right? You look at losing Brandt on Tuesday and now losing Royce, and this is a game where the chances were there and they weren't put away. But to have a rivalry match, right, something that even though Schalke are not great this year, you're dealing with something emotional in that matchup that other people wouldn't have to against them, I think it's fine that it's a 2-2 draw. I think it's fine that Guerrero steps into midfield and gets you a goal. And it's obviously not their ideal setup It's interesting that Reyna doesn't get a part of this game after coming on in the 12th minute or whatever it was in Champions League. But I do think for Dortmund, they won't walk away feeling like things are gone. They have the matchup head-to-head against Bayern coming, I think, in 2 weeks at the start of April. And it feels like this was a game where you came out of it saying, we're still playing high-quality soccer. You can still see their DNA in what happened.
Yeah, and the biggest issue for Dortmund in this game, for me, started before the opening whistle was even blown, right? It's the fact that half their best players are out with injuries or with the flu in Marco Reus's case. They're missing Kobel. He doesn't play in this game. They're missing Julian Brandt, which we figured after the Champions League injury. They're missing Adeyemi. They're missing Marco Reus. I mean, they're missing Mokoko. They're missing a bunch of different players right now. And Gio Reyna is still clearly not trusted by Terzic to go basically 90 minutes and then come out and start another game. Like, that's what he did in the Champions League. And it's clear that Dortmund are managing his minutes in a real way, because you go back through and watch his performance against Chelsea. Yeah. He was good. He was good in that game. He was influential. I don't see, other than, you know, off the field stuff that we don't have info on, I don't think it's unreasonable to say that his minutes are being managed right now. So you add that. I mean, Taylor, you put this in our doc with notes. Like, the tactical setup from Terzic, or at least the positional alignment, was weird, right? You got two right-footed players on the left side. You got Rafael Guerrero as a number 8 in central midfield. Not that we haven't seen those things before. Not that we haven't seen them before for Dortmund even. But it felt weird, and I would bet a lot of money that is not the ideal lineup, or really some of the tactical intricacies weren't what Terzic wanted them to be, but he was forced into them because he doesn't have a healthy top 20 players right now.
Yeah. And yet they found Malin breaking through 3 times, in which he puts one of them away and they win this game. And the Schalke goals, I can understand the frustration watching Dortmund, which is they come out of nowhere. They come against the flow of the game, which is also a classic Dortmund thing, that they can be soft in big moments, especially with Emre Can sort of being the only one centrally in those spots. But I think overall you come out of it saying, like, they're playing well. And I think you'll feel confident going through the next stretch of games.
And that's right. I think you all have done a good job of laying out a couple things there, Joe. Obviously, the injuries and the way this sort of lineup is approached. But also, Goss, I think looking at Schalke and that sort of rivalry influence, it's also worth noting this is a Schalke team who, though they are second bottom in the table, have the best run of form of any team, like, outside of the top 7 or so, I would say. They unbeaten in their last 5, 3 draws, 2 wins in the league. And so it is a Schalke team that seem, if not resurgent, because that feels like an odd thing to say about a team that is still very much in the automatic relegation places, but they seem like a much more disciplined, difficult team to beat. And I think this game was sloppy at times intentionally, that Schalke were happy to just frustrate, to sort of play individually in the attack, but limit Dortmund in their own attack. And in that way, I think they will certainly be happy that they get this point, that they're able to come back and get the point. But for Dortmund, I think I'm sure they will feel chagrined that they're not able to hold onto the win or score a couple more. That Rafael Guerrero goal has to make them feel pretty happy, though, because it is lovely and a perfect example of how I think it's one pass to Emre Can, and then maybe that's it, and then he plays it in. I forget if there's more people involved, but I think it's only 3 players, and it goes 70 yards up the pitch. It's Bellingham to Emre Can, I believe, straight into Rafael Guerrero for the goal. Maybe there's one more involved, but I think you still saw those signs that Dortmund can be ruthless and lightning quick in their attack. And so it sets the stage for, we've got Bayern Munich hosting Borussia Dortmund on April 1st, 2 points separating first from second. That could be the difference maker one way or the other. So I think that game just becomes all the more fascinating, because Dortmund might look vulnerable, but I think for all the reasons we've already laid out, there is still plenty to be nervous about if you are Nagelsmann.
By the way, I would throw on my German whatevers for this game. Like, I would go to this matchup. This has to be one of the bucket list matches in the world.
My German whatevers?
What?
Yeah, I was going to say Lederhosen, and I was like, I would not. I would not put that on. So I'd hold a German beer and drink it, though.
Goss just wanted to say he'd go to this game.
Yeah,
whether
exactly.
He's going to wear... I mean, I guess he doesn't want to go so bad that he'll wear Lederhosen. Where is the line? I'm not really sure. Like, how silly does your dress have to be?
I think it's denim jacket, leather sleeves, Hasselhoff embroidered on the back.
Yeah, tight. I'd do it. Tight. I'm sold.
Right, perfect. And a sworn statement that you've never had a Bud Light before, because I don't think that would fly in Germany.
I'll
either.
Have to wipe some social media back
yeah,
pictures.
There you go. Scrub that. Bayern Munich 5, Augsburg 3, an 8-goal thriller in Bavaria here. Bayern were a goal down. They scored 4 in the first half, though. We had it was Pavard with that scissor kick, Taylor, wasn't it? Which was delightful.
Yes, I'm not going to lie. I saw that get retweeted, and I was hopeful that maybe there would be another Byron Stutter so that we could have that title race look even tighter. It was not to be, because Pavard just does that every now and then. He just remembers, like, oh, right, I can score a worldie, and then he does that. We had him doing that. We had Schlotterbeck having a beautiful sort of, like, free-flowing attacking goal from 25 yards out where he hits it perfectly. A good day for defensive players to be out there scoring goals, or I guess a good weekend for it.
Yeah, definitely. So Leipzig 3, Borussia Mönchengladbach 0. Leipzig are in third place at the moment.
Yeah.
Gladbach in a bit of rough form right now, Taylor.
Yeah, they are. Joe Scally was okay in this game. He was one that I was keeping an eye on. But yeah, Gladbach still in 10th. 30 points from 24 games is definitely not where they thought they would be. And it does feel like with Marcus Thuram definitely leaving at the end of the season, they're in for a bit of overhaul. They're going to have to change things up. Who knows if that will be the manager? Hopefully not. But for Leipzig, it was a very strong performance, even with key players out. Nkunku is not involved in this one, but you wouldn't have known it because they played the 4-2-2-2, which was lovely to see again. They suffocated Gladbach for much of this game. I think it's only in the second half, what, like the 50-somethingth minute that the first goal goes in. But watching this whole game, they're just completely dominant. Gladbach have a few chances all on the break, all on a counter, all on sort of giveaways from Leipzig. But aside from that, they completely controlled the game, did Rasenballsport, and had so many different attackers sort of buzzing around the box. I don't know if having one more just proven goal scorer would make that difference, but to see them look so strong at attack, so calm on the ball without Nkunku, has me thinking that they might be in a better position than I thought at the end of this season with him likely leaving. And I thought a lot of that has to do with what Marco Rosa has been able to do as a manager, where there are, though I said they're playing a 4-2-2-2, I can't believe I got the numbers right twice in a row. I never get those numbers right. There are, it's a liquid shape, because sometimes it looks like a back three, sometimes it looks like a back two, sometimes it looks like a front six. They just keep people moving, they keep players rotating, and eventually they found a way through, and I thought this was another strong performance from them that moves them into third place in the Bundesliga.
Yeah. I like you dropping Rasenballsport and Revier Derby just to make David feel welcome today. It's very nice of you. David, let's take a beat on the bottom of the table in Germany. 10-man Hoffenheim losing to Freiburg. They are winless since the 9th of January. Up next for them, Hertha Berlin, who are 1 point above the relegation zone. Ooh, drama.
And you mentioned with Schalke, the run they've been on. Every other team in the bottom five got results, and Bochum got a win this weekend. So you see sort of towards the end of this run, or towards the end of the season now, everyone except Hoffenheim waking up and saying, oh, I'd like to stay in the Bundesliga, and Hoffenheim laying down and saying, yeah, we don't want to be a part of this. This is probably something we shouldn't be involved in, but it's going to make it entertaining because I think there are points to be had off some of the champion contending teams over the course of the end of this season from this group. And you're seeing more cohesive units from Stuttgart as well as Hertha. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun coming down the stretch here. I would throw in Leipzig, 7 points off the title. And obviously, we mentioned Dortmund, Bayern have to face off against each other coming in 2 weeks. I don't think Leipzig play Dortmund again. They may have one more against Bayern. So I don't think Leipzig are out of title contention either if they can keep their form. I also wouldn't be shocked if they went through in the Champions League. Like Taylor mentioned it. They look really good right now. They look cohesive. They seem to know who they are. And if Timo Werner is scoring goals like that, like, you have to feel like life is good.
If Timo Werner scoring goals, you have to like this. You can just phrase it that way if you like, David. Very good stuff. Bundesliga, check. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's go to Spain, let's go to Italy, and of course, let's take a look around the horn in MLS. Back shortly.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back. Let's go to Spain, everybody. Athletic Club 0, Barcelona 1. Rafinha with a goal that survived a VAR check in this one. Joe pumping his fist in approval at this one. I'm pumping mine too, Joe. I bet the Barca win in under 2.5 goals in this one. I'm very happy. What did you make of it?
Good for you, Ryan. Good work. I mean, it's a strong bet. Barcelona haven't been in, generally speaking, they haven't been in like rip-roaring goal-scoring form. So I don't think they've scored more than once in any of their last 5 games. Ryan, you probably have that script memorized from your bet reasoning there. But this was another game of Barcelona attempting to control the game with possession. They get a goal. It's sort of an anticlimactic goal from Rafinha. It's a nice finish, but then we go through the whole VAR, was he on, was he off situation. And then finally it feels like we learn, and then it goes right to halftime, and it's like, what even happened there? I don't know. So anyway, Barcelona go up 1-0 before the halftime break. The real controversy in this game comes at the end of the match. Iñaki Williams gets a goal to equalize late in the game. It's a really nice goal, him streaking in behind the back line. It reminds you of how good Iñaki Williams can be when there's space for him. A moment of Barcelona losing that control that they really want to achieve with their possession, but it's called back for a handball on Munain in the build-up to that goal from Iñaki Williams. It's a brutal moment for Athletic Club. It is absolutely heartbreaking for them. They almost had a point out of this game. They're currently sitting in 9th in the table. This would have gotten them, I believe, up to at least 8th in the La Liga table. I think it was the right call. I know a lot of people were talking about this, and it's harsh because of how early it occurs in the build-up. But it hits the guy's arm, and you got to call it. If VAR sees it when you go back through and watch that goal sequence, I think you've got to call that one. So overall, not the most impressive performance from Barcelona, but these are the kinds of games that you have to win if you want to stay, you know, enough ahead of Real Madrid, who seemingly always win these games too, or at least did in seasons past, maybe less so this year. But Barcelona has been the best team in La Liga this year, even on a day like they had against Athletic Club, where they aren't, you know, playing the opposition off the field. It feels like they're grinding out those kinds of results more often than not this year.
Joe, you should cancel your Bilbao vacation, because they are not going to be happy with you. They did not enjoy that call on any level. And if you're going to say it's the right call, you should definitely not go there anytime soon.
It wasn't like at the top of my list, simply because I feel like there's a lot of other good spots to go. Say Maryland, say St. Louis. I know Taylor's favorite place and Goss's favorite place. So, you know, maybe Bilbao is sort of third on that list, but I guess I'll bump it down a little bit further.
I'll say I've been to Bilbao. I've actually been to San Mamés. I did a thing there a while ago, and they have a drink there. The drink is called a cachimolo. Do you know what that is?
No.
It is red wine and Coca-Cola. And that's what they drink.
Yes.
And it is glorious. Mm. It is much better than it sounds. So make the trip there. Go see the San Mamés and the Flower Puppy and all the wonderful Bilbao stuff, and have a cachimolo. What do you think, Joe?
All right, I'm down. I got to borrow Goss's German disguise and scrub this episode. I'll go back through retroactively and delete it. And then I can go. After St. Louis, after Maryland, then I can go.
I like Joe doubling down with Goss pointing out, like, you can't go there anymore. And Joe being like, fine, it was on my list anyway. Yeah. I don't even want to. I don't even care. Be that way, Joe. Be that way. I think I agree mostly. I was definitely not thrilled that this goal gets called back, because watching it in the moment, it was like, oh, this is incredible. This is such a great story. This is such a great moment. And then for it to come back because, yes, Munain jumps in, but is not looking at the ball, is looking away, basically. So he's not trying to use his arm. I think the ball just kind of makes contact. You could make an argument of maybe don't jump in blind with your head facing the wrong way if you don't want calls to go against you.
Well, it doesn't help that Frankie de Jong's foot is 8 feet off the ground when he's going in for a header.
Also that. And I think compounded by the stories about Barcelona, or the allegations of Barcelona paying the vice president of officiating. I forget his exact position. But basically the officiating scandal and the involvement of Barcelona makes this one, I think, even more of a talking point, rightly or wrongly, whether or not those two things are connected. Just because it is them going from dropping points in a game that they maybe should have done better in to suddenly, Joe loves that phrasing, to not dropping points and getting all 3 points. And this was, I can't remember if it was Joe or Goss who earlier said that, like, Arsenal going out and dominating was a sign of a champion, or a sign of, like, what you have to be a champion. I agree with Joe. This was a game where Barcelona just had to get through it and get a win, and that's what they did. I don't think it was a pretty game. I think Athletic Bilbao made it very difficult, made it very physical, made it high tempo, and I saw Barcelona giving the ball away pretty regularly in the first 30 minutes or so that they're able to then get a result maybe with a little bit of VAR influence, is still a credit to them and a credit to their like hopes of retaining their top spot for the rest of the season. But at the same time, just how like negligible, is that the wrong word? Just that it's like it occurs so far back from where the goal is scored. And there's so many other things that happen in the lead up to that goal. It just felt mildly immaterial, given that where Frankie de Jong's foot was and everything else. But at the end of the day, the computer's going to show a handball, and the computer's going to say it's a handball, and here we are.
Just break the rules early. If you're going to break the rules, just do it before the important stuff happens. I mean, that's the secret sauce.
Thanks, Joe.
You're welcome.
That reminds me of from Pete Joe. The secret ingredient is crime. I don't know where I've got
also, one of my so the Barca story is that they paid 7 million euros for... They found out that they gave the money to the vice president. They say it's for match reports. Mm-hmm. That's what they were paying for, which means we are all in the wrong industry. We should be generating match reports, because apparently they go for $1 million a pop.
Yeah. Wow. I believe match reports that they cannot produce and do not have any record of, but the son does, and he's definitely turning them over. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on there, guys. I don't know what to make of that one.
Match reports and whatever that like 4-day contract work that Mancini was doing in Russia or whatever that was, those are the two industries that we should be in as a group. Ryan, work your contacts, get us in.
Yeah, or just being a really good soccer player's dad really is a good
that works.
Gig as well, I think.
That works really well.
Yeah.
Todd Boehly's Bud Light handler, also well-paying, I would assume. Yeah.
Boehly's beer man.
Boehly's beer man. There's my
it's like
handle.
The Narcos like trafficking routes, except for Todd Boehly, it's just a giant plane full of Bud Light that he flies wherever he goes.
Is Potter Boehly's beer man? I just really want to call Graham Potter Boehly's beer man for the rest of the season. I think I'm going
beer
to
bros.
Do it.
It's
I'm
Boehly's
not sure
beer
anyone
bro.
Can stop me. Yeah.
They actually deliver it all to the island of Jersey. They convince Bud Light that it's actually New Jersey, and they move all the shipments there, and then they boat them up.
There we go. Jersey is a tax haven as well. I'm sure Boehly would be very interested in that. Anyway, I'm going to move on before the fire truck of lawyers come a knock in. Real Madrid 3, Espanyol 1, a fight back from a goal down for Real Madrid in this one. A season-defining week for Real Madrid with Liverpool coming up. And then, Barcelona in the Clásico next weekend should be interesting. I'm going to go slightly off-piste off the running order and just introduce some Italian soccer for a second to talk about, gents, because I love it here, as we know. That's canon. Napoli 2, Atalanta 0. The aforementioned Kvaratskhelia getting the opener in this one. I sent an image to our TSS Slack of Kvaratskhelia when he gets the goal. There are 9 opponents in the box. There are 3 in front of him. It is that Maradona image of him against, is it Belgium, where he's got them all lining up in front of him? Ridiculous, Taylor. He's a ridiculous gentleman.
He really is. We had that question last week about if we were going to build a team around one young player, would it be Vinny Jr., Kvaratskhelia, or Marcus Rashford? I had Kvaratskhelia second on my list. I still would, but it's a closer one. It's a much closer one after that goal and after that graphic, which was like borderline iconic for him. And another great win for Napoli against Atalanta, who are a very difficult team to score goals on. And I guess historically have been a difficult team for Napoli to break down and get a result against. So for them to do so in pretty compelling, comfortable fashion, I think also has to be making Kvaratskhelia that much happier.
Yeah. 2 other things I enjoyed from this game. The kickoff. I don't know if you guys saw the kickoff. Napoli had 8 players on the halfway line. And as soon as the ball was touched, they all ran forward like an NFL play. It was like just awesome to see. And also the DAZN. I never know how to say that. DAZN, is it? I think you said how you say that word. That's the coverage. The coverage they do here in Italy. The presenter, they've got Diletta Liotta, who is Loris Karius's partner, who was in the news a little while ago. She was given coffee and the rest of her presenters live on air by Napoli's kitman/head barista. Kitman/head barista. Dual duties there for a man named Tommaso Starace.
Is that a Ted Lasso character? That's what that sounds like to me. The kitman/barista feels like something that he would have made happen.
It's just the most incredibly Italian thing you can imagine. But he literally comes on air and he's got the mocha pot he's made the coffee for. It was a wonderful moment there. Just wanted to mention that. Look it up on the socials if you feel inclined. Second place Inter lost 2-1 at Spezia on Friday night. A fun one in Rome as well. Here in Rome, Roma losing 4-3 to Sassuolo on Sunday evening. Roma going down to 10 men in that one. Paolo Dybala with a great goal. Should you care to look that one up, to last but absolutely not least, let's head to Major League Soccer. Joe Lowry, I'd like to start with LAFC 4, New England 0. Yeah. Two teams coming into this round with 100% records. One of them still has one.
Yeah, it's not New England. LAFC absolutely dominant in this game. New England had a couple of nice moments, but LAFC are in a class of their own in the Western Conference right now. Seattle is still a strong team. They lose 1-0 to FC Cincinnati earlier in the weekend. That game happened on Saturday. Seattle's still a very good team, but LAFC going down to play Alajuelense, to dominate that game, by and large, to come back to Major League Soccer, to dominate that game after scoring three goals against Portland in week one, which was really week two, but week one for them. I mean, they've scored an absurd number of goals through three games in all competitions, and they looked really, really good. Guys, Tim Tillman coming into midfield, part of the rotation, the slight rotation from Steve Cherundolo in this game, looked like an extremely capable MLS starter, to put things a little bit mildly. I mean, Cherundolo could afford to rotate in every single line of the field. It wasn't like an 11 for 11 swap, but you get a different player in the front line. Stipe Buic comes in for Carlos Vela. You get Tillman in for Cifuentes in the midfield line. You get Palencia in the back line. You also get Aaron Long in the back line. This team is stacked. They're deep. They were dominant in this game. They real, real good, guys.
Real good indeed. Yeah. Taylor, did you catch Minnesota's draw and 1-1 draw with the Red Bulls? Beautiful weather they're having up there in Minnesota.
I loved it. It was my favorite. It was my favorite because there was an orange ball. Are you kidding? I don't even care about the result. I just love that the orange ball made an appearance this early in the season. Hooray for soccer in March in Minnesota and giving us those types of conditions and that color of soccer ball. I was pretty enamored of that one. I was definitely very much enjoying the LAFC game last night. It was a comfortable win for them, Joe. I know I'm not like, I know this is going to come as a shock to say that the defending champions are pretty good still, but they are very good, and they gave New England problems all over. They looked so comfortable on the ball, certainly more comfortable than maybe some of the players in the snow in Minnesota, but definitely LAFC leading the way for me and making me think that they're probably going to be back in there in that conversation come the end of the regular season.
Just to tag on the LAFC convo, so they went down to Alajuelense and won. Alajuelense first in the Costa Rican League, which is clearly the third best league in the Americas. They had only ever lost 10 matches in that stadium across all competitions in the club's history. And LAFC went and won 3-0 in that building. So like, that's how big a deal that was. On the Minnesota game, Taylor, I'm glad you enjoyed it. I was offended. Two goals in the snow and no snow angel celebration. Like, what are we even doing as a society at this point?
Not that again. Not that again.
So
at least they play Wonderwall when they score or when the game's over.
When the game's over. If they win, maybe, I think only. But come on. You score a goal, you wheel away, there's snow covering the sideline, and you're not gonna go for a snow angel celebration?
I mean, I'm assuming that like that just becomes commonplace for them and they no longer even like see the snow. Yeah. But yeah, snow angel, snowball fight, make a snowman. There's so many different options and ways to celebrate. I think just make a snowball and hurl it in the direction of the VAR officials. What could go wrong?
Indeed. I like just clearing the snow from the lines as well. So it's basically a snow-covered field with the lines made out. It's always beautiful to see. I do enjoy that very much. David, Portland 1, St. Louis 2. St. Louis, the first team since Seattle to win their first three matches. The Sounders...
Charlotte did that, though, right? No? Did Charlotte not do that right?
We'll get to them. We'll get to that sham in a second. The Sounders, when they did that, David, went on to make the next 13 postseasons. I got that from MLS Wrap Up. I stole a stat. You're welcome. Thanks, Jill.
It was it was impressive for St. Louis. It's been impressive. Three wins in three games. Like, this is a dream scenario for them. I'm not going to lie, I don't think they're Seattle right now. I don't know that they're LAFC right now. But if you stack points early, it gives you an opportunity to, you know, maybe waver in other spots. Their depth has been tested a bit. Center back was a huge loss for them. Joakim Nielsen was supposed to be the rock of the team. He's out to start the year. He might never come back, so we're not sure there. And Hibbert stepped in and been really good. But Klaus looked awesome in this game once again. They started a 17-year-old in central midfield at Portland against one of the most senior central midfields in the league in Miguel Perez, who this was the point of the team. St. Louis is a soccer hotbed, and you know, now have an opportunity where this player doesn't have to go to college. They don't have to move to another city. They don't have to go to Europe. Like, you can start and play high level games and then go back and finish your high school classes on Monday back in St. Louis.
That is awesome. What is not awesome, David? I don't know if you saw on social, Portland's social graphic after the game. A 2-1 loss, of course, this was. Held at home was the caption. Held at home for a 2-1 loss. That's not what that means.
No, I don't approve at all.
It's still live. As we record it, it's still live on social as well. So have a think about yourselves there, Portland social team. Also to have a think about themselves, Joe, Charlotte FC, 0. Atlanta, 3, I should say. Caleb Wiley, homegrown of Atlanta. He was part of their first ever academy in their under-12s. A brace and an assist in the first half for this one. Let's talk about how great Atlanta was and nothing else about the other side. Yeah, cool. Yeah,
we can do that. Sorry, I'm still stuck on the Portland thing. Is it just my brain that, like, totally understands what the admin was trying to do there? Like,
no.
They were held at home. Like, you lost. We were held at home to 0 points. Should I not die on this hill? Should I just roll over and accept society?
In standard soccer nomenclature, held means a draw,
yeah,
surely.
It does mean a draw.
Okay. Yeah. Gotcha.
There's no way around that, Joe.
Not that I disagree, but I feel like I always hear that as held to a draw.
Yeah, but Ryan's point is they weren't. They lost.
Right, but like if you just say held to, is the to a draw implied? Yes. Are you saying it's automatically implied if you say they were held? You think you can finish that with to a draw?
This just feels like a Britishism, and I generally try to reject all Britishisms in soccer other than the word soccer.
They were not held by anything. They lost the game.
Joe, I would die on the hill with you on that, and I still think you're wrong.
Okay, all right, fair enough. I will see for that reason
hate
alone.
Britishism.
I love how angry Ryan got there. That made it all worth it. Let's talk about Atlanta, and then we can make Ryan feel even worse. Atlanta really good in this game. They looked electric. Thiago Almada looked like a difference maker MVP level player. And Caleb Wiley is out here shining on the left wing, which I don't ultimately think is going to be his best role, but he's still so young that, you know, maybe it could be at 18 years old. I think ultimately he's going to go back and be a left back and be just a really vertical, athletic, technical presence from that spot. I think he's going to bring more at left back than he will at left wing. But with Derek Etienne Jr., Taylor's favorite player of all time, close family friend, with him still working
best
his way
friends,
back
best
into
friends.
The team, then it gets
closer every time you say it.
It does.
I think.
It does. Next time
best
it's going to be
my
someone
wedding.
Like cousin.
Yeah.
Either way, best man at Taylor's wedding, all that stuff.
Yeah.
I think it makes sense to play Caleb Wiley out on the left, and he was really good, incisive, direct, efficient with his touches. So a lot to like for Atlanta. One thing that I didn't love. And Doyle was all over this on Saturday, is how long Luis Araujo takes to do everything on the ball. He is an elite talent in this league. He is top three in terms of raw ability and skill on the ball, but he almost always tries to be a Harlem Globetrotter instead of like an actual NBA player. Like that's what I think of when I watch this guy play. He's always doing like three things too many, and it took what could have been a 4 or 5-0 win for Atlanta into a 3-0. So ultimately didn't matter in this case, will very much matter as the season goes on. Ryan, let's talk about Charlotte, shall we? They're really bad. Like there are bones here for this team that can make them competitive. They are not as bad as they showed in this match, but they were played off the field. Like, they were getting booed at home by their fans, and understandably so. This team is weird right now. Karol Swiderski doesn't belong out on the left wing. It doesn't make sense to me. He should be playing underneath or just as a lone striker. Like, I don't understand, and maybe we'll talk about this more on tomorrow's show where we dive deeper into some MLS stuff. For me, if I'm Zoran Krenetta, I don't really know why your big offseason move was to go out there and sign a number 9 when you have a number 9 on your team and you don't have an above average number 10. And if we know one thing about MLS, it's that number 10s can be like these outsized impact game changing players. And if you get a really good one, you go out there and spend $6 million or whatever they spent on Capetti on a number 10, like, you immediately become a better team. I don't understand why they chose to allocate resources in the way that they did over the offseason. Between that and probably some overthought tactical choices from Latanzio, and just the fact that their DP signing from midway through last year in Joswiak is a bust, like, it's rough times in Charlotte right now.
But at least they have the worst goal difference in the entire league. Is that not good?
Go ahead, Ryan. You can take that one if you want.
I don't think it is, in summary. Overthought no? tactical choices is a group way of describing Latanzio's approach here, Joe. It made Pep looked like he phones it in that sense. It was a lot of crazy moves going on.
Swiderski thing, the wild part is that he doesn't play him there. Like, okay, you finished him as a 10 last year, and you were like, okay, this guy's a really good 10. But now they don't play him in that spot. So it's not even like, well, we can't sign a 10 because Swiderski's at his best there, so we have to leave him there, because they don't play him there anymore.
Yeah. And I go ahead, Taylor. Go ahead. That's fine.
Well, I just want to say, like, this was my concern from the beginning. In my preview, I talked about this, that Swiderski, like, can play in that spot, but from what I saw and what I read, wants to be the kind of, like, late arriving runner, wants to play off the hold up forward, who will then sort of play him into space and then be there if there's going to be like a low cross, the FIFA goal or something like that. But Copetti, like, sort of, I think, is going to be the player who also can, like, he can lead the line, but he can also sit deep. And it just felt to me like it was not necessarily a match made in heaven, like they were going to do redundant things. And I feel like they are sort of doing that right now. And maybe that's why we're having to see Swiderski moved around, because I think they're still trying to figure out a way to get the best out of those two players, since, as Joe said, Jozwiak isn't doing very much. But it still just feels like the things that I was concerned about doing that Charlotte preview, and I think a lot of Charlotte fans were concerned about, are very much present so far, only three games in. We'll see what happens. But it doesn't seem like we're getting more clarity with Charlotte. It feels like we're getting more questions than we are answers.
I will say it will get better, Ryan, for you and for Charlotte fans. It's going to get better because
can't get worse.
It can't get worse. Same time, they're straight up more talented, though, than Montreal. They're more talented than Chicago. Like, they're not going to win the Spoon this year. At least I'd be very surprised if they did. It doesn't take a lot of thinking to figure out a more sustainable way and a more effective way to set up this team. I will be shocked if we don't see at least a couple of changes in the 11, or at least positional changes, by next week. Things will improve, but yeah, just an incredibly frustrating start to the year for Charlotte. But
Ryan, I will say, I think it's impressive that 2 years in, you have created like a culture in the club in which you have traditions like your coach saying it's the player's fault and the players aren't good enough 2 years in a row. Like, it takes clubs generations to build traditions like that.
You can't buy
culture.
Exactly.
Oh my.
I appreciate you leading us on that note. We'll be going into MLS a lot more in Tuesday's show, as Joe mentioned. David, I'll give you the floor. Is there any other MLS games you wanted to give a quick shout out to before we head off into the sunset today?
Yeah, I think we have to mention FC Cincinnati beating Seattle at home and doing it pretty handily and looking really good. They are a team that, you know, fifth in the East last year after being the worst team in the league for three straight years. Wasn't sure if there's more improvement there, because just staying there would be impressive. And this win is like, we could be supporter shield contender type team. Lucho Acosta looks incredible. Brenner had the whole Nottingham Forest deal where it looked like he was going to England. He didn't. He was in Brazil, kind of was unsure if he'd even be a part of the team. He scores the goal. And they look dominant against one of the best teams in the league. And the other one is Andre Blake coming off hurt for Philly. He's a goalkeeper, so he doesn't get MVP votes. He doesn't get talked about, but Philly's been arguably the most consistent best team over the last 4 years, 3 years, and he's their best player. So if he's out for a large stretch, that changes the calculus, I think, across the league.
Good stuff. We've covered an awful lot of ground today. Let's go and have a lie down and think about all of that. For now, Joe Lowry, thank you very much indeed for your contributions.
Thank you, Ryan.
Taylor Rockwell, pleasure as always, sir.
Pleasure was mine, my friend.
And David Goss, excellent stuff. Won't you join us again on the Weekend Review?
Guten Tagen.
Yeah, all right. Thank you very much, listener, for joining us on this one. We'll be back on the feed.
Is that hello?
I mean, it's not like an aloha situation.
No, it's not a both ways.
No, it's not. But we'll work on that. Don't worry, David.
I mean,
but,
hey, if buongiorno can be or whatever. Joe, what did you go with? Did you just go with bonjour?
Just bonjour.
As a way to end the show? Bonjour. Bonjour, well, guten Tag.
I'm glad I went with it.
Goodbyes.
Because I just Googled it. It says it's Verabischingdung. So.
Oh, flawless German. Yeah. Flawless German. I love that Ryan, who actually speaks German, has kept his powder dry on this one. Ryan, how do you say goodbye?
You can say tschüss.
Oh, you're going to do it now, aren't you? You're going to do it, aren't you? Do it. And end it the way you do. Sing song juice for me.
Oh, okay. Listener, thank you very much for joining us. We'll be back on the feed shortly. Tschüss.